We have the final results for the Skagway election and area voters gearing up for the state election notice a glaring omission from their voters pamphlet. It's a KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friednauer. Those stories and more up next. Absentee ballots were counted late Thursday afternoon in Skagway, and the count did not change the final outcome of the races. Most of the races on the Skagway ballot were too close to call after Tuesday's election, with as many as 87 absentee and question ballots left to be counted. On Thursday, a total of 84 ballots were counted in the canvass, with the following results. Incumbent Dan Henry retains his seat on the Assembly, and Angela Greaser is elected to the second open Assembly seat. Greaser beat out candidate Roger Griffin by only 8 votes. There was a bigger margin of votes in the race for school board open seats, where incumbent Kara Cosgrove retains her seat and will be joined by Mary Tidlow on the school board. Candidate Mark Smith came in third on that vote count. And Skagway voters passed a $12 million bond for a new public safety facility by a vote of 203 for the bond and 189 against. But the second ballot question, whether to implement a 1% sales tax increase in the summer to pay for the bond, failed. You can find the detailed breakdown of the final results on skagway.org or our KHNS website. Haines and Skagway residents late this week began receiving the pamphlet that comes out during election season, listing information on all the official candidates for state and federal office. But some people quickly noticed the pamphlet had a glaring omission: any information about independent gubernatorial candidate Bill Walker. The Division of Elections told the Associated Press earlier this week that it is reprinting the voter information pamphlets to include Walker. Division of Elections Director Gail Fanumiai said candidates are sent letters informing them of the pamphlet, which includes information provided by the candidates on their families, interests, and reasons for running. But Fanumiai says Walker wasn't sent the letter. She said it was a mishap by staff, noting that Walker declared his intention to run last year and slipped through the cracks. She said it was too late to include Walker in the version of the pamphlet that voters began receiving this week. She said the division has printed a supplemental packet for the gubernatorial and lieutenant governor candidates that voters should receive late this week or early next. Walker has been added to the online version of the pamphlets as well. Walker said in a press release he thought the division had acted to address the problem for in-state voters as quickly as possible, although he said unfortunately the incomplete guide has been mailed to thousands of military and other overseas voters who already have ballots. With mining always a topic of interest in the area, here's a story to do with the Trans-Boundary Mining Projects. A British Columbia mine northeast of Ketchikan has gained some key permits needed for construction. But the KSM project still needs other government approvals and large investments before mining can begin. Spokesman Brent Murphy says the new permits allow construction of 2 roads from a central BC highway to the mine complex, about 20 miles from the Alaska border.
Right now we're relying on helicopters, which are a very expensive way to access a project. So these are significant for us because it will allow us to start building an alternative means of accessing the project.
Road construction is expected to cost more than $200 million. Murphy says work could begin in about a year if remaining permits are approved. But first, mine owner Seabridge Gold must find investors for the $5.3 billion project.
That construction could start should we have a partner in hand, and we remain hopeful that we will have a joint venture agreement in the very near future.
The new permits, granted in late September, also cover a pair of 15-mile tunnels connecting the ore body and the processing facility. In addition, the permits cover air and water discharges from the project's construction camps. KSM has already won key environmental approval from the British Columbia government. It's awaiting similar action from Canada's federal government.
It would add a significant amount of delay into the process, obviously for our final environmental approval, and the time delay on this could be anywhere from 18 to 24 months.
Some Alaska tribal, fisheries, and environmental groups want the KSM to undergo more environmental scrutiny. They say the mine could damage salmon runs on BC rivers that flow through Alaska or enter the ocean nearby. Critics say the mine is of no value to Alaska since all the work will be done in British Columbia. They've been pushing for what's called a panel review, which would involve further examination of mine plans. KSM's Murphy says that would push back construction, which would increase costs. Murphy was in Juneau last week to meet with government regulators and business leaders. He was interviewed after a presentation to the Juneau chapter of the Alaska Miners Association. Alaska writers and naturalists Richard Nelson and Hank Lentfer are nearing the end of a 2-year project recording the voices of Glacier Bay. The project is a collaboration between Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve, University of Alaska Southeast, and Cornell University, which houses the world's largest collection of natural sounds. Nelson and Lentfer hope to change how others experience the world through a dimension beyond what we can see. As Lisa Fu reports, Lentfer and Nelson want us to listen and listen closely.
In May 2013, Richard Nelson and Hank Lentfer set out into Glacier Bay, armed with recording equipment and a wish list of sounds. They spent up to 10 days at a time camped in the park, often waking up at 3 a.m. to the soundscape of birdsong. Since then, they've collected more than 1,000 sounds of the park, including about 100 bird species. Lentfer says they've captured the gamut of marine mammals, a range of terrestrial mammals.
And we've got things like glaciers and streams and rivers and melting icebergs that pop and bubble as they're melting. Just all kinds of crazy sounds.
Nelson says the Voices of Glacier Bay project was born from the premise that society has stopped listening.
We live in this world that's just filled with beautiful sounds, the spring choruses that we can hear in the forest, and the wind and the waters. We're constantly surrounded by sounds.
But, he says, we grow up in a culture that doesn't pay attention to them. In the field, the duo used sensitive mics and a parabolic dish that gathers and amplifies the sound. Often the best technique was proximity.
If you can get close to a single animal talking and get all the nuances and textures of its voice, it makes for a great recording.
But there are times when this doesn't work.
Like a thrush sounds best if you back off from it a little bit and get that rich melodic sound bouncing off the surrounding trees.
Nelson says the forest acts as a thrush's natural amphitheater and helps create a cathedral sound. An optimal time to capture this effect is after a rain or in the morning.
When everything's wet with dew and you have all these wet reflecting surfaces. So you might have a million little reflectors that bird is singing into. And all that comes back into your microphone and creates this amazing resonance that you just can't get if it's in a wide open place.
Of the more than 1,000 sounds they captured, Nelson and Lentfer each know instantly what their favorite sound is.
For me, it was coming down the bay in the skiff late in the evening in August, flat calm, the sun was going down, and we got into a channel between a big bedrock mountain and a large bedrock island, probably a mile and a half apart, and there were maybe 30 whales in there in 3 different groups.
Lentfer heard the whale's breathing, and what followed was the biggest sound he's ever heard.
So, of course, I get out the microphones, I get set up, and there's a boat in the background. It's like, oh, are you kidding me? You know, I can't record. Wait. The boat goes, get ready, another boat. But the whales keep making the sound, and finally the bay gets quiet, and they're still doing it. I hit the record button. The real joy of recording is it just locks you into the present moment. There's nothing but that sound. And you're just reveling in the beauty of it and a great fortune to be there in a place where those sounds still exist.
Nelson's favorite experience recording in Glacier Bay took place in June on a day when he and Lentfer decided to go in separate directions. As Nelson kayaked into a small cove,
I saw an animal on the beach, and the animal turned out to be a wolf. I didn't have my equipment ready, and apparently the wolf didn't care. It started to howl.
Nelson moved toward the shore very slowly. He sat in his kayak about 50 feet from the wolf. It laid down, and Nelson waited and waited and waited. Finally, Nelson says both he and Lentfer feel an incredible sense of privilege for getting to do this work.
We are able to go into these places and hear the original voices of the North American land. Hopefully, future generations will be able to hear our recordings, and in a perfect world, people will be able to go back to these same places and hear these same voices 100 years from now.
For both men, there will always be the sounds that got away, like the earthquake in June that originated in Glacier Bay as both men slept in a tent miles from the epicenter. Or like the elusive wolverine, there are sounds they'll be chasing for a long time to come, possibly for the rest of their lives. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Special thanks to Ed Schoenfeld and Lisa Fu for help with this report. Thanks for joining us for your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.